The exit ramp number 6, May 17th, 20, 57 71sts.
The plane, but our smoke is just all going forward.
The huge planes. I tell a story, yeah. Red eye from LA, and it'll be like 04, 10, and 04. And you would lay across. You have the whole row you can lay across.
Yeah.
We saw Peter Licky was in here for a moment. Peter, can you hear us?
What? Oh, there he is.
Peter. Can you hear us, Peter? He's under the name Joker Weasel. Our weasel names. Peter, I just saw him. Peter, no, come on.
Yeah, I can see him frozen.
I don't see him at all. Let me see him.
I know. It keeps bouncing around. I'm not seeing everybody anymore.
Really?
Yeah. When Joe was talking, I couldn't see him.
There's Peter. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Frank.
Peter, welcome to the exit ramp. This is
Peter. Sorry I interrupted. I had a hard time finding getting to Zoom to my phone.
Wow, it's Peter Lipke here on the exit ramp. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Frank. Long time no see there, buddy.
Wow, it's so great to see you. I know. So
it's good to see you, too. I was having a hard time with the audio. I don't know what happened.
So say hi to everyone that's here. We have Mark in Portland. Say hi to Peter. We have Becky in California. Carrie and Joe, who I think you've met, right?
Yes.
My sister and brother-in-law. There's Doc Slees in England.
Jan Eric.
Jan Eric in Norway. Rob. Rob from the. You've met Rob, right? You've met Peter. Yes.
Wait. Is your brother John on?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm right here.
All right.
Hi.
Hey, John.
Denise. Hey, how you doing?
And then we have.
Good, buddy.
Then we have
Chad
also in Texas, and Joe also online from Illinois. So everyone meet Peter.
Hello.
Oh, my God. That's so cool.
Wow. So Peter, how have you been? Peter is calling in from New Jersey as well, right?
Yes.
What part of New Jersey are you in? The very snobbish town of
Basking Ridge.
Basking Ridge.
Basking Ridge.
Some
of my favorite episodes of Overnight Escape were the ones where Peter was on it.
Yeah, Peter's been on the show so many times and all our weasel adventures. Peter is an Overnight Escape Underground star.
Hey, how about the killer bag?
Yes, killer bag. There was this guy Nick that we used to know, and we went out to this Hackettstown, New Jersey, which is sort of it's one of these impossibly like obscure towns, like Hackettstown, New Jersey. Well, that's where M&M Mars is based, all of the M&M's products. And we were in the parking lot of what was it
ShopRite or something?
It was a Walmart, I think. And
yeah, you're right. Walmart.
It was freezing. It was like below zero, and we somehow there was this plastic bag blowing around, and you called it the killer bag.
And
it was like the classic bit, the killer bag. That was around the year 2000 or so, give or take a year. Yes.
Oh my God, it's such 20 years ago, bro.
Yeah, I know, it's wild, but.
Peter, the killer cup. Remember?
And then the killer cup. Yes.
The killer cup. Yeah.
Sneaky TT tonight. September 2014, 125/536.
Just wondered if you'd had a chance to get any further reactions, or if you're, or have you just been busy?
Well, I've been talking around here, of course. The mood is one of exaltation. I talked to Bill Buckley, who thought it was absolutely outstanding, very moving, very effective, great courage, and that, of course, he wants us to end the draft, which.
We're going to do that.
But we're going to do that, and I...
Tell him what we're going to do.
I told him we're going to do it, and I think, Mr. President, I'm going to put the military to the torch.
Yeah, they're screwing around on this.
They're screwing around. They're worried that it will make the volunteer army not work. But the hell with that, if we can get ourselves breathing space for Vietnam...
Listen, ending the draft gives us breathing space in Vietnam. We'll restore the draft later, but goddammit, the military...
They're a bunch of greedy bastards that want more officers' clubs and more men to shine their shoes. The sons of bitches are not interested in this country.
I mean, ending, going to all volunteer in Vietnam is what I mean, is what we ought to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can put them to the torch and get a figure,
mm-hmm.
and then perhaps announce that in June. The,
fine.
I think the reactions, all the reactions that I've gotten, which are mostly...
you haven't talked to the Alsops or the rest, except...
No, I'll give Alsop a call right now.
Give Joe a call. Let me know what he thinks.
And I'll let you know.
But you should have heard from others. They would call you if they thought it was well. Maybe
oh,
they
no,
were
no,
too.
No. I never hear.
Give Joe a call. It probably shook him a little to have it emotional. But God damn it, you need a little emotion for this country.
This, Mr. President, was your greatest speech. Whether it has the same impact as some of the others...
No, it won't have, but that's all right.
But this was a...
We shook him.
Everybody, it comes across from everybody that he held his course. I don't know whether you have seen the news tickers.
I don't look at that.
Well, but it's he held his course, a strong speech. And I don't know whether anyone has told you about Dan Rather's commentary afterwards.
No.
Now, if we could have written it, it couldn't have been better. He said he promised a withdrawal of 25,000, he withdrew 30,000. He promised a withdrawal of 40,000, he withdrew 50,000. Shows that you've exceeded every promise you've made.
Yeah, and now we're promising a draw of 100,000.
And he said, no, no question. You know, there was no doubt that when he got through that you would keep that too.
But we're going to.
And he had a good shot there. He showed it in terms of men. A very large man representing what you had there when you came in.
Yeah.
Much smaller man.
And they all apparently were moved by the conclusion, huh?
Oh, the conclusion really gave everyone goosebumps.
I keep quoting a line from the film, which fortunately never made it to the screen. In fact, I didn't even film it. It was cut out of...
Quakeversal Satellite, Rasputin, December 23rd, 17, 12 twelfths.
Let's see, so they moved back after 1976, because in the summer of 1976, we moved out of that trailer into a house, my parents, my brother, and I believe, because the trailer was still on my grandparents' property, and right next to their house, I suppose, it was a very convenient place to bring my great-grandparents for, to, I guess they were tending them for their final years. Boy, they must have been elderly to begin with. Anyhow, we will be continuing more of this interview on our Sunday show. I think once again we'll focus on it because there's still quite a bit of this tape to go. I didn't realize that. I mean, I didn't look at the length to start with, but it looks like there's still over an hour to this. So we will keep a rolling. You got any comments? Yeah, if you can leave them right on the site, or if you got contributions, you want to send me direct comments, the email address is kpqr.torc@gmail.com. Thanks so much for being here and supporting, making all this driveling I'm doing purposeful in a wonderful and amazing way.
The Overnightscape 1630, Europe 5, September 2nd, 19:064-135.
And there was in the placa, there was a little place where you basically dipped your feet in these fish tanks and fish would eat the dead skin off your feet. It's like finally you could become the fish, the food for the fish. Pretty disturbing. The last night we were there in Zathinkos, I just took a quick walk down to Kapu, the coffee shop, and it was really cool walking in that area. Very, like, economically depressed town of Serrakinado on the Zathan coast, but just walking by myself was very, very therapeutic. One thing also, we keep smelling the same scent, this weird, almost like a perfume and incense smell everywhere we go. Like, even out like, on the volcano. It must be a popular perfume. Or else some more bizarre situation. situation. I don't know. Any more random topics? I was trying to get through these random topics here. I think that was about it. Enough random topics here. Yeah. Good. Good. We're all caught up. Whew. All right. I think I'm going to head on back to the old Center City and wander around some more. See where else we can discover here in Rome. All right. I got off the bus halfway back because I figure I'm going to get onto the metro here at Conca d'Oro. This ticket I have, I was able to validate it on this bus. I should be able to take this subway, the metro, back down to where I want to go. And more continuing the adventure. It was cool. When I left the mall, I found the place to get the bus, but there were two lanes. So I stayed in the lane that said everyone else was waiting in lane one. In lane two, there was it said the 80 bus, and this guy came over, and he saw all of the trash, the litter that was there, people waiting for the bus just throwing their bottles and bags, everything, and it looked like he was getting agitated. And then this woman that was there like just tossed some junk there, and he looked over at me. He's like, hey, he started talking to me in Italian. I'm like, Yeah, I was like agreeing with him, like these people shouldn't litter that much, you know. So it was a weird moment. I couldn't talk to him, and there was really no need to say no, I speak English, because I understood what he meant, you know. All right, here's the trains, all trains. I'm in the subway. I have not been in the Rome subway system, so I just this is one thing I wanted to do. And I got to figure out where I'm going. I know there's a station for the Colosseum, which is not that far from where I live, where I'm staying. I'm going down, but I still see the sunlight. This is cool. Further journeys into the unknown.
The Midnight Citizen 99 sweater weather, October 4th, 14. 05/24.
Gone, you know. And no big deal. It was always just something that we said. Every once in a while we'd be exchanging stories about the weird things that would happen at the park. Oh yeah, by the way, there was this guy out here who took pictures of himself with his clothes off and then ran from Rangers. So and you know, I mean, he was just, it wasn't like he was doing anybody harm, I guess. He was just kind of, it was probably just this thrill. I mean, there's probably this like underground network of naked photographers who go around not taking photos of things naked, but just taking photos of themselves naked. So, you know, I guess it would be totally different if they were going around like taking pictures of people while they were, you know, and, you know, if you don't have any clothes on while you're taking pictures of someone, it could be construed as kind of perverse or voyeuristic, you know. So, yeah, we never really thought about it much after that. We just told stories every once in a while. And then, lo and behold, this actually makes the news. I'm like surfing AL.com, and I come to find out that a naked man supposedly taking photos of himself without any clothes on was seen running around I-59 north of Birmingham. This is an interstate, and he was on the side of the interstate taking pictures of himself, so there was really no way to be discreet about that one. You know, if you're in the woods, it's one thing, but this guy, I don't really know the whole story. Supposedly he was just parked his car and then took his clothes off in the car and then got off of the car, got out of the car. Sorry, wrong use of a preposition. Just took a quick snap of himself. I guess somebody saw it. Probably a few kids probably saw it and complained and called the cops. And he got out of there before the cops could show up. All they had were a few, you know, ambiguous police reports. So, and it wasn't like a UFO sighting where like one person sees it. No, like a whole lot of people saw it. So I guess it has to be real. You know? And then he just escaped. Kaiser Soze, gone, you know. So he's out there. He's like somewhere lurking, waiting to jump out with his clothes off and just take a quick picture of himself and get out of there. See, I don't know if the if the Birmingham police have any knowledge of this guy, that this was a this was the second time, at least that I know, that he did it. You know, I don't know if it's a really big deal if they've got like a huge case file on this guy. I gotta go catch him. But, you know, there may be some other places in the world where this, like, happens a lot. You know, just people do these perverse things in public. You know. I mean, maybe it's really...
The Overnightscape number 751, November 2nd, 08, 8 ninths.
Yeah. Definitely has that kind of hoppy flavor, but then it has that kind of real, like, edge of, like, a dark chocolate, dark bitter chocolate kind of flavor. It's Imperial Red Ale. So now let's go to their website. Let's see what they have to say about this. What is it? Rogue Brewing? I don't know. Synecdoche. There it is. Let's see. Rogue Ales. All right. See what we got here. Rogue.com. Oh, they, wow, look at that. Good for them. They got Rogue.com. And there's a picture of the bottle I have right here, but you can't click on it. What is this? Yellow Snow. They sell Yellow Snow beer. What is going on here? I want to get some Yellow Snow IPA. Wow. You know, Yellow Snow is when someone's like pissed on the snow. Ha ha. Where's the Reddit? Where's the friggin' excess? Oh, there's more excesses. Wait. There's more. Look. There's more excesses. Old Crustacean, and Imperial Stout. Wait. Where's mine? Maybe it's discontinued. Wait. They don't even have it anymore. What happened? What? They don't have it anymore. What? Maybe it's discontinued. Can I search? No. Damn it. This is maybe just like Zima. This is Imperial Red Ale was discontinued. I don't know. This is good stuff, though. Mm. Oh, look. Here's the launch party. Rogue Ale's Imperial Red launch party.
All right. I need to let you know a couple things before we bless the cake and continue with the festivities.
It's good stuff. I really am liking this.
All of the meeting halls of the Rogue Nation are involved in the same event we're involved in right now. That would be San Francisco.
Yeah.
That would be Newport.
Come on.
That would be Issaquah. That would be Eugene. That would be Astoria. The roof is back. That would be the brand new one at the airport.
What is this guy rambling on about?
Great place to get breakfast at 7 o'clock in the morning. And also, we are celebrating the first new John Meyer Ale of 2008. Be the fifth in the family of the XS, which means extra ingredients, extra taste, and most of all, extra alcohol.
The Rambler number 222, March 2nd, 09, 10.2, 18/23.
The Sweet Factory, it's all closed, very sad. Get a little receipt, go up to the bank teller, and they'll give you the cash. I know what you think. Oh, well, it's probably only for customers at the bank, and they probably charge a certain percentage, and they're like, no, no percentage. You put the coins in, and you get the money. Well, it must be for people that use the bank. That's probably what it is. Like, you know, if you're a customer of Commerce Bank, you can use the Penny Arcade. And they're like, no, no, anyone could use it. Just come in, put your coins in there, and we'll give you the money. It's like, wait a minute. Like, what's the catch? There is no catch. So my wife and I started going to the Commerce Bank, and it just, that was fine. It worked. In fact, I think I recorded myself going to the Commerce Bank and doing that for the first time. So now, of course, with all the banking chaos in the recent months, I go to the Commerce Bank over there in right on the edge of Nutley, I guess in Bloomfield. And it's not, of course, it's not Commerce Bank anymore. It's TD Bank. Okay. So I go in there. It's the same exact, everything's the same, but now they have all the new logo in there. So now it's TD Bank, Penny Arcade. So I go in there. Where is, what am I doing here? Okay. All right. So I go in there, and there's a person in front of me doing the Penny Arcade. Everyone's going to Penny Arcade. Everyone's getting rid of their, well, especially these days, you got to get some money, you know? You got to scrounge around for some change and take it to the Penny Arcade. So I go there, start dumping my, I have a lot. This is a box, it's like so heavy, I can barely carry it. Start dumping it in there. And then, like, as I'm halfway done, it's like, oh, it has a stupid cartoon character. Oh, you filled up the bag. Why don't you get a bank employee to help you? So I had to get this guy. I caught him as he was coming out of the bathroom. The bathroom, they actually had bathrooms there too, which is amazing. Can you imagine? Free coin changing and bathrooms. I was impressed. So, let me come over here so I can record a little bit while I'm waiting for the bus. The guy comes and it takes him like, I don't know, he has to pull the entire thing out, and I see how it works now. You see the inner mechanism of the Penny Arcade, which is just sort of a biggest sort of industrial machine. It's probably the coin machine that they use, you know, in the back room at a bank. And they have just these big clear plastic bags, like really, like, but tough ones, you know, like really strong plastic, attached to the to these different chutes for all the different kind of coins. So I guess I don't. They said one filled up. I guess they must just be counting, and when it reaches a certain level, you know, they need to put a new thing. So he it took him forever. He like took off the quarter bag and sealed it up and put a new bag on there. Then he tried it; it didn't work. Then he took some more penny and like two penny bags out of there. So he's like, and he's just sitting putting these giant bags of coins in. Not only that, there actually were like big piles of foreign coins like just on the machine. They were like $2 Canadian coins, $1 Canadian coins. I mean, I'm sure if I wanted to, I could have taken them. They're just sitting there, but I didn't want them. Like, what am I gonna, honestly, what am I going to do with a loonie or a toonie, you know? So, yeah, I know some Canadian lingo.
The Overnightscape 2081, Electrical Novel Time, January 9th, 24:09/53.
We used to obsess over these books. Oh, that's a cool one. That red spaceship. It was a particular style of spaceship that's so cool. Terran Deep Space Troop Carrier Lima. Scene of an abortive mutiny just before the city ship's breakout. The delta-shaped craft are shown are space-to-surface personnel ferries with which she was equipped. Oh, wow. Yeah, this is really cool stuff. And someone wrote all these stories, like linking all these paintings together. I don't know if these paintings were made for these books or they were sort of repurposed for these books. I'm not really sure. Yeah, Montclair Book Center, yeah. The price tag was made in 2010. Wow. $10. Great price. Anyway. So, yeah, that Facebook group, people have, like, obsess on these books and stuff. But it's kind of like, yeah, it's like our desire for freedom and going beyond. Kitty, relax. Yeah. Anyway, that my dream reminded me of it. All right. Yeah, I found a reference about this comic strip, right? It's called The Explorigator. And this is from the Against the Day Pinchon Wiki.
Harry Grant Dart's comic for the newspaper The World, The Explorer Gator, featured the boy crew of the Explorer Gator, a fantastic airship that traversed the universe. It was manned by Admiral Fudge, a youthful adventurer and inventor, accompanied by a group of friends, also children his age, around 9 or 10. Detective Rubbersole, Maurice Mizentop, Nicholas Nohooks, Grenadier Shift, Teddy Typewriter, and Ah, Forget It. The Explorer Gator ran for 14 weeks in 1908 and made an impression for its imaginative and visual creativity. And I also read that it was sort of conceived as a rival to Winsor McCay's Little Nemo's Adventures in Slumberland. Harry Grant Dart was born in 1869 in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. His first job was rendering crayon portraits for the National Crayon Company brochures. He drew for the Boston Herald in the mid-1890s, but it was when the New York World arranged to send Dart to Cuba that his active newspaper art career began. In 1898, he was sent to Cuba by the New York World to cover the Spanish-American War as an artist. He sketched many important events, such as political conventions, in the days before photos were printed in newspapers. Dart rose to be an art editor for The World, and it was from this position and utilizing the techniques he employed in many freelance cartoons for Life that the comic The Explorer Gator was conceived, to rival the popular Little Nemo by Winsor McCay in the New York Herald. Dart did many amazing illustrations of futuristic aircraft for various magazines. Great examples of a subgenre of speculative fiction called steampunk, which came into prominence in the night.
The Midnight Citizen 107, Anaconda, Montana, December 14th, 14, 22, 26.
So thanks everyone for coming along with me tonight. Suffering through all the technical problems and getting closer to that 10,000 hours, you know. That's like I said, I mean, if I have problems on the show, if I have failures, it's honestly just because I haven't gotten to the 10,000 hours needed to be really good at something, to be an expert at it. Yeah, that whole thing comes from Malcolm Gladwell, who is a writer, and he wrote this book called Outliers, where he talks about successful people and what made them successful. And it's not just the typical successful person, you know, the guy who can get a job and hold it and make salary and buy a new car every year and be considered successful, you know, in normal American terms. But these guys who are like the captains of industry, you know, who like set standards for success, like the Bill Gates and the Steve Jobs. He talks about Bill Gates, you know, this guy who picked up a computer in 1967 and for 10,000 hours, you know, basically 20 hours or more a week, programmed on it. And by the late 70s was pretty good. So, but I don't know. It is, as I was saying at the beginning of the show, it's kind of an arbitrary number. You know, what actually measures success? What actually, you know, being good at something is a very subjective term. You know, and there could be like some luck that figures into it. And it certainly doesn't matter on a human level. I mean, you could be an expert at something and still be like a shit as a human being. But I don't know, I guess you just pick something that you want to do, and if you're passionate about it, you just keep doing it, and eventually you get to 10,000 hours, and, you know, people consider you a success at it, I guess. I mean, as I said, I think it's honestly propaganda to give people false hope or to get people to just say, I can't possibly spend 10,000 hours at something. You know, I got a job, I got a family,
I got expenses and bills to pay. So maybe it's just kind of propaganda put out there by the so-called 1% to get us to shut up and not encroach on their territory, not compete with them. But I don't know. I took it as very motivating, just to keep doing this show and to try.
The Overnightscape 1281, Mound, April 29th, 16, 38 49ths.
Any time is right time with a Pentel 67 that writes with the greatest of ease. Not an ordinary marker, it's Pentel's economy priced 67. Slim trim with durable nylon point. Writes fine, medium, or bold. Don't just ask for a marker, ask for Pentel 67. Only 29 cents everywhere. There is a world of difference. By Pentel, makers of the famous Sign Pen.
The Fisher Space Pen. It writes in space. The Fisher Space Pen, actually used by the astronauts on the Apollo flights. With the Fisher Space Pen, you can write continuously at any angle. Yes, it defies gravity. The sealed ink cartridge, pressurized by nitrogen gas, gives a positive ink feed to the ball, enabling the ink to flow uniformly without skipping, no matter how fast you write or in what position you hold your pen. Fisher Space Pens write three times longer than ordinary pens, and they write over grease, over fingerprints, and underwater. The Fisher Space Pen, engineered for astronauts, styled for executives. The Fisher Space Pen, it writes in space.
Futurama. General Motors Futurama at the New York World's Fair, where you meet the future face to face. It's an experience you'll never forget, because the fantastic Futurama ride takes you into the future and makes you feel like you're there, in outer space, beneath the sea, in unbelievable places, watching believable things happen. Many of the futuristic things you'll see are already more than just a part of the General Motors Futurama exhibit. They're demonstration models, in a sense, of scientific ideas being developed now. Stroll down our avenue of progress and see this kind of product on display. And also the exciting array of new products in our product plaza at the fair.
Quakeversal Satellite Charcoal, March 6th, 14, 10 16ths.
But lucky in me, just in case something happens. You never know, right? Could have one of those Zeppelin accidents.
Oh, the humanity!
Manatee. We have manatees where I live. Manatee is a blubbery type mammal in the water. And I don't really know what purpose they serve. You can't eat them. You can't kill them. You can't have fun with them. You can't ride them. You can't. What good are they? They're part of the ecosystem. Whatever. I think we can do without them. I'm not saying we should kill all the manatees. That's not what I'm saying. Don't take me out of context. I'm just saying, what good are manatees? Oh, the humanities. Oh, that's what we could call fat people. Humanities. Humanities. All fat people are now known as humanities. Oh, you see what happens when you listen here? When you listen here, stuff happens.
Tell a neighbor, tell a friend, hey, pick up that Jimbo podcast. He's dangerous and crazy. Needs to be locked up in an institution. He says all kinds of crazy crap.
I wonder if manatees like coal. Put some coal out there. I'll go out there and dump my barbecue pit in the river and see what happens. Yes, manatees, alligators live in the river here. It's crazy. I don't even want to go down there. I could probably throw a rock and hit it if I was Roger Clemens or somebody. Nolan Ryan, not Mavic, or what, whoever. Roberto Clemente. Dave Parker. Somebody with a great arm, you know. Andre Dawson. That's another guy with a great arm. Outfield arm. Could throw the ball, you know, 500 feet. Man. Best arm I ever saw in baseball was Dave Parker. Dave Parker always impressed me with his arm. He was accurate, and I never really saw Clemente play, so I've seen newsreels hundreds of times. I mean, I have. And he looked like he had a great arm. But in my lifetime, let's put it that way, my lifetime, the best arm I ever saw was Dave Parker's from the outfield. So there's my baseball history lesson of the day. Jimbo's baseball thought of the day. I don't know if I'll do that. I'd have a million of those because I love baseball. But Dave Parker, man, that guy was a monster. I think he was like over 8 feet tall and weighed about 700 pounds. He was way bigger than Herman Munster. He was way bigger than him. No, I think he was about 6'5", you know, 240. He was a big guy. He had a very strong arm. The best arm. Best arm I...
Tapeland 129, Fan Beyond the Range of the Groove, March 1990, 09/22.
We'll therefore have to change somewhat to accommodate me. This is similar to reality acts strange to you when you act strange to reality, and is also somewhat similar to you act strange in a certain way and your subconscious mind has to change the rules to accommodate you. The same would be said for groups. Since I've eradicated, since I have done away with, let's say, the subconscious mind, and I've done away with the idea of anything beyond reality, basically. Well, I've done away with the idea of the subconscious mind. And also my idea of reality is much more refined now. So what I would say is that a new theory would be that subconscious mind does not essentially exist. That there is a set of rules that you apply decisions to. If your decisions go outside the range of what would be considered groove or normal waking reality, then reality itself will change through your conscious actions. Geez, I thank reality that I am recording this now, and hope it is certainly recording, yes, because I think that right there was an important point. Making a decision outside that range would then change it in a certain way. So now what I figure out, keep saying we, but it really is I, though I may be more than one, what I have to figure out is what kind of action, what extent of the action, and directions and everything else. If I'm saying basically, if you act in a way outside of Gru will have to change to meet your demands. Gru will have to alter in order to accommodate you. Therefore, the more of other things you do, the more it will have to continue to accommodate you. And the more it will change to do that. But of course, the rules define the way in which reality progresses. So that is what is affected.
The Overnightscape 858, Circus on Off, March 1st, 12:02/54.
Leap year 2000. By the way, this is The Overnightscape you're listening to. I'm your host, Frank Edward Nora, here at the bus stop in the morning. Look at that. 2000 was a leap year, but 1900 was not. That's interesting. So it wasn't. So this it definitely is 12, but there's all these like complicated rules for every 100 years. What are they saying here? Gregorian calendar. The algorithm. Leap day. Here we go. Come on. I'm trying to figure this out here. It's a very long article. I can't find it. Hold on a second. The year 2000 was somewhat special as it first used the instance when the third criterion was used. What? This is getting very muddled. Very muddled. There we go. 2012 is a leap year. This is so annoying. I can't. Okay. Here's the rules of the leap year. The year is evenly divisible by 4. Check. If the year can be evenly divided by 100... it is not a leap year, unless the year is also evenly divisible by 400. Then it is a leap year. Okay, so this, finally, oh my God, finally I understand after all these years, like, was 2000 a leap year? I read something. It was. Okay, the year 2000 is a leap year, and the year, so what was 400 years earlier than that? 1600 was a leap year. 2000 was a leap year, and 2400 will be a leap year. 1800, 1900, 2100 are not leap years. Wow. The year 2000 was somewhat special in that it was the first instance when the third criterion was used in the most parts of the world since the transition from the Julian to the Gregorian calendar. So I guess since that calendar's been popular, you know, we use it here in America and stuff, and it's kind of a world standard. So this is the first time that a year divisible by 100 was a leap year. Okay. So anyway, it is leap day. Now, people that are born on this day, I think, are legally, like, younger than other people. I don't know. When do they celebrate their birthday? I guess on March 1st, right? It's kind of weird, though. Like, if you're, like, 44 years old, you'd only be 11 years old, technically, or legally. Would that really work legally? So you wouldn't be able to get a driver's license until you're, like, 100. Wait a second. No. Until you're like 90. That would suck. Your whole life would be destroyed. You'd be considered a child most of your life. Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. Well, yeah, it's leap day. 2012. Yeah, if you're listening in the far future, you might distantly remember that people thought the world was going to end this year. And you know it didn't. Oh, it's a lot of hype, I think. I'm not 100%. Who knows? Maybe it's true. It didn't happen yet.
Overnightscape Central Alternate Reality, January 26th, 15:01/25.
Hi, it's PQ Ribber, and it is also the Overnight Scape Central, and this week's topic is that phenomenon that, you can't prove it, but I think most, if not all of us concerned here, involved in the Overnight Scape Underground, would agree that there are turning points. There are decisions we make, and there probably are these alternate universes, possibly even an infinite number of infinite numbers of alternate universes exist, perhaps vibrating right here at a different frequency. There could be one where Erskine Falls is the host of the Overnight Scape Central. You never know. But in this particular reality, that is the topic for this week's Overnight Scape Central, and the Overnight Scape Central is a participatory program where everyone is, or in this case was, welcome to contribute an audio, or in one case, somebody sent in an email, which I will be reading on their behalf, as I offer to do, because that's only fair. Some people are mic shy and or don't have facilities to record, and they should be heard as well. Let's see. Yes, the topic this week is alternate realities. And just think, in a different reality, you might have hit play on this particular file 2 minutes later, and that may have made all the difference. It may have helped you win the lottery, and now, well, you are stuck on this reality track. To open things up, why not go to the go-to guy, the founder of the Overnight Scape Underground, Frank Edward Nora.
We do seem to live in layered realities at all times, and we ourselves experience many different realities, and then there are those that we imagine or that are hinted at. I guess our main alternate realities is just during the day. Like right now I'm at home, and this is one scenario. I'm not necessarily planning on leaving the house today, so it's going to be kind of an existence of being inside here. It's just me and Mr. Jesse the Cat. And this is, I've entered kind of a new reality for myself, because just the other day, my cat, Mr. Sasha, died, and I talked about that on a recent episode of The Overnight Scape called 21st Century Cat. And then the same day, my wife went on a trip to Texas. So this is a very different reality for me now, which points out that we're all time travelers. We all travel into the future. And you know, when I think about, you know, the 1980s, for example, going to video game arcades at the mall in the 1980s.
The Midnight Citizen 94 Limbo, August 30th, 2014, 05/17.
Manager at the place, that every day people come in and we're providing really good customer service, and we're making sure people leave satisfied. We want to take people who may be a little afraid of heights, maybe afraid to go up on the zip line. We want to make sure that they're comfortable by the end of the day, you know. And, of course, we want to give them a certain degree of adventure and make them feel like what they're doing is dangerous. And that's all part of the experience, you know. And I can definitely say the people I've been working with all summer have been very good at that. And I've been really proud to work with them. So, you know, and, you know, this girl, whenever she came out, she would boss people around, and she would just assume the operation under my leadership or under this other guy's leadership who's splitting duties with me. She would just assume that things were not running right and that we were too lazy or whatever. And I've never been one to feel like this is the kind of job that really warrants any kind of dictatorship. I'm not going to come out at the beginning of the day and bark around orders, because at the end of the day, I know exactly what needs to be done. I get people to do them. They do them without any kind of hassle, without any kind of back talk, and they just do them because that's the kind of leadership that this job needs. It doesn't need this military, you know, inspect foot lockers every 5 minutes, wake up at 6 a.m. and go for a 10-mile hike. You know, it just doesn't require that kind of leadership. It's not that type of job. You know, people show up for zip lines and you take them out and you play along with them and you make them happy. So just from my experience of working at this place 2.5 years and going through 3 managers before me, you know, I looked and I saw what everybody before me did wrong, and I tried to do it right, and I saw what they did right, and I tried to continue that, you know? So I show up on time every day. I have to because I ride the bus, and the bus drops me off right at 8 o'clock every morning when I have to be there. And generally, I've just been very, very proud, and I came away from the summer. You know, the summer season officially ended at the park a week ago, and you know, I've just been very proud of the way that I ran this summer. I feel like I made the park a lot of money. People would call and want to come in for like a walk-up, something that was off the books, and I would book them. So every possible opportunity I could, you know, I made the place money. It's me. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. Come on, Anna. Come on. So, and what was I talking about? And it's just a very, it's just a very...
Overnightscape Central, Fun Times, September 17th, 19:08/49.
And I saw entering Southampton Water from Cowshop. And you got an idea of the scale of the ship. Because to pass into Southampton Water from the Solent, it has to go past, as all ships do, it has to go past Calchot Castle and also Calchot. There's these huge, to put it in context, Calchot, once upon a time, was the Royal Air Force's main seaplane base in the south of England. Shows how long it's been there. The castle actually dates back to the days of Henry VIII, But it's where quite a lot of the, during the war, certainly, I mean, pre-war seaplane base, but during the war, a lot of the RAS flying boats used for long-range anti-submarine patrols, short Sunderlands mainly, which are huge four-engined machines, were based there. And there were these huge hangars built there. And these flying boats would be hauled up out of the sea into the hangars for heavy maintenance. Now, the hangars there now aren't the originals. They're new buildings built on the sites of the original hangars to the same dimensions, and they're huge. And inside now, because Calshot's an outdoor pursuit centre now, and you can do all sorts of things down if you go down there, like hiring canoes and kayaks and all that sort of thing. And people do things like windsurfing there. All sorts of activities going on. And inside those big hangars, there's like those artificial rock faces you can climb, amongst other things in them. All sorts of things going on there. Anyway, that puts a gun. So there's these huge hangars and a castle, and there's this big tower. I'm not sure if it's still used for it, but it's like a control tower. It goes up very, very, very high. It's used by the Royal National Lifeboat Institute, certainly in the past, it's used for as a control centre for maritime rescues. Anyway, the ships have to come past. Well, there's something as big as the MOL Tribute. And she was coming into Southampton Water from the Far East. In fact, Singapore she was coming in from was a previous port of call. She's running 2.5 hours behind schedule. And what I saw, and she's fully laden with containers. The decks are it's just stacks of containers on the decks. And you know, down in the hulls, in the holds, there's even more. Probably all full of crap produced in the Far East to be sold in pound shops in the UK. But there you go. That's neither here nor there. But she dwarfed the castle and the hangars as she came past. If anything, she's probably bigger than any of the cruise liners I've seen coming and out of Southampton Water. Quite a sight. And she made a stately progress past all these things and into Southampton Water. The last I saw of her was she was about to sail down past the Fawley oil refinery before she got to the past several more tankers before she got down to Southampton docks, where she'd been berthed at the container port and her containers unloaded for distribution in the UK.
The Meanderer, June 21st, 22, 120/356.
There's a weird group. Like teens heading towards the hospital, but like raucous student types. Do I stop again? So obviously my main issue is, as a diabetic patient, is the sweet stuff. I could get parties. What do I want? Parties? Oh, there's a security guard here, 0405. I don't pass this close to this building very often. I just did get the sense of, not deja vu, just the sense memory of walking through the door. Just felt a flash of fear, not sure what it meant. But I looked up and saw...
The Overnightscape 792, Cyber-Noctis Cellars, June 29th, 11, 1825.
...machine ever made on emulation. PleasureDome.org, www.pleasuredome.org.uk. But be very careful to follow the rules or they'll kick you off.
Yeah, whoever
did.
Take care.
Fuji, what's that? All right, I gotta go to work. I'll be back with more stuff. All right, I'm here at lunch. Hey, test.
Whoa.
Hey, I'm here. It's lunchtime. What is this? Cops let jackass bring city to a halt. Polish joke. A rapper wannabe scaled a Times Square utility pole yesterday, incredibly shutting down streets for 20 surrounding blocks and snarling traffic for hours. Police seemed helpless as he played to the crowd and arrested the man only after he voluntarily climbed down. Was this yesterday? Because the day before, they shut down Times Square because of a suspicious package or something. Wow. All sorts of problems. They had to close down 20 blocks for a rapper wannabe? That makes no sense. I don't get it. I'm getting all confused. I just went to the ATM, and it was one of these things where, you know, there's three ATMs there, and there's three people there, and they're all, like, typing away. Beep, 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 beep. Inserting their cards, taking their cards out, inserting their cards again. Beep, 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 beep. Like, three people. What are they doing? What kind of incredible complex transactions are they performing at these ATMs? Beep, 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 beep. Put your card in again. Beep, beep, beep. This old guy, like, getting all confused. It's like, and it says, please enter your numbers. And he looks, he like takes his glasses off and looks down. Beep, beep. It was like unreal. And then I got a $19.95 $20 bill. The old school 20. I got it. Oh my God. Where is it? I don't want to like whip out money, but oh my God, look at this artifact. It's so weird. I feel like I'm time traveling. Series 1995. Robert Rubin, Secretary of the Treasury. It's like, it's ancient. It's like so cool. I got to keep this one maybe. This is like a collector's item at this point. The old $20 bill. It's of the, you know, the same design as the $1 bill. Many of you kids may be too young to remember these old $20 bills. Wow. That is amazing. It's still legal tender. I hope it's not counterfeit or anything. Why would they do that? Why do they... I guess it's legal. I don't know. I don't know. See, I'm thinking hopefully this episode will not be as long as the previous one, which, of course, called Two Rust Ritual. And what is the secret of that title? Two Rust Ritual. I think I'd probably have to describe it, because I don't think anyone would ever get it. Not that anyone should get it. It's so obscure. It's like, it's so... I should talk about it, I guess, because it's so obscure. No one, I don't think, would ever see it. Like, but yeah, it was the longest episode.
Overnightscape Central open, February 9th, 16, 2046.
Basically, need to have is pre-recorded stuff that can get people to listen to. And I would say that this new technique of, you know, basically getting people to listen by having a kind of a chart, checklist, game board, whatever you want to call it, that where each unit is a thing to listen to. Of course, this is very similar to my other ideas. Certainly the Storm Drawn Scroll and what I had intended the Storm Drawn Scroll more to be. But this is an idea that I think transcends that a little bit. It's not going to involve setting storms and stuff. This particular idea is going to involve just having these checklists and basically moving through them in different ways with prerequisites also, which I think is interesting, where you're moving along a pathway, for example. So, I think this idea is viable. I also think that in terms of, I think I've said that this is sort of the only way I can go at this point. I'm sort of at every turn being shunted and pushed into particular decisions. And in this case, I really feel like there's really no other decision I could make other than this. I have to do this. So it's so I think I should make the most of it. One phrase that I had on the first Love Cosm site was that it compared it to the excitement of early MTV. And that really is kind of what I'm looking for, an excitement. Like that. I think that the length of these units that I'm talking about are going to need to be dictated by, again, looking at the user experience and seeing if people are really going to do this. The length of the unit should probably be such that people will actually listen to them and not get frustrated. So trying to think about the listening experience. When are people going to be listening? How are people going to be listening? And one way is people will listen to it on their computer. In which case, they'll be sitting in front of their computer and listening. Another thing might be transferring it to an MP3 player, listening to it on the way to work, for example.
Frank Norris Show 1658, Queen Horns, March 1st, 11, 1431st.
Definitely true. The word podcast is, it's with us, but, and I was thinking about this. You know, it was literally a long time ago, but the Apple company started suing people that had the word pod in their website. That really put a chill on the word podcast, being that Apple was suing people that used the word pod. And even Adam Curry's company, Pod Show, they changed it to Mevio because of all the pressure from Apple to take the word pod out of everything because they felt they owned the word pod. But really, podcast now is a legitimate term for a method of delivery. Not everyone uses podcasting to listen to the show. For example, if you go to ownsug.com and you click on the Flash player and you listen to a show, there's no podcasting involved. Podcasting is if you're sort of receiving the RSS feed, automatically downloading or whatever. I don't even know, because on my Boxy box, there's an RSS reader, and you can sort of just, it's kind of cool, you can load up the Overnight Escape Underground and listen to the shows. I don't know if that's podcasting, though. That's a good question. It's more like the automatic syncing with an MP3 device was that. It's kind of weird. I don't know how many people are using the podcast method. If you have an iPhone, you can just listen to a show directly over the internet. That's hard to say. Anyway, the word podcast definitely is never going to be the dominant word, but it's there, so whatever. So anyway, that is my view on all these topics. And I definitely think, as far as having enough content for four channels, if we can split it up, I don't know how much material, I have to actually measure how much I'm doing every month. If we're talking 15 hours per channel per month, am I already doing, would one channel just be me? I don't know. I don't know that that would necessarily want that. I want it to mix it up a bit. And I do think, it would be cool to do a music channel with all the Creative Commons music. So we have to see how we're going to do that. But that's part of it. Anyway, those are my views. Another lovely day here. It's freezing, though. Yesterday was warm. Today's cold. Tomorrow's going to be warm. The next day's going to be cold. Crazy weather. And also, as usual, crazy, weird chemtrails and chem clouds in the sky today, as usual. It's so common, it's like, you just don't even, almost don't even notice it anymore. I'm almost becoming like everyone else. I don't even notice it anymore because it's so common. But I do notice it. I try to notice it. a topic that was sort of mentioned the other day when I was with J-Wiz and M-Wiz. Charlie Sheen going on Alex Jones and calling himself a Vatican warlock assassin and all that stuff. I listened to that. That was pretty amusing, I guess.
The The Overnightscape 1081, The Audio Field Trip 29, May 31st, 14, 2367.
Maybe I could ask them if they have anything like cassettes. My Little Pony stuff for the bronies. It just feels almost like this is sacred ground, man. This is tape world, okay? The Doctor Who department, 50% off. Oh, the entire store. Are they shutting down? Hot Topic. No, I don't see any cassette stuff. I won't bother them with such a frivolous question. And oh, this is nightmarish. This used to, right over here, there used to be the exit to the mall, and there was Big Entertainment, was a mall store that sold like life-size Stormtrooper models and frames from films and like Star Trek watches and things. Big Entertainment. And over here was Koenig's Art Emporium, where I used to get letters at dry transfer lettering. But where, like, the parking lot has now been built out into Dick's Sporting Goods. Look at this. Dick's. It's a two-level Dick's Sporting Goods. I think I've been here once. But this used to be where the Art Emporium, Koenig's Art Emporium. Big Entertainment, Tape World. There was always a certain feeling here, but now there's like a whole new entrance. Should we go to Dick's? Yeah, this is enormous. Dick's. You know, all those bothersome words that also mean penis. That make people chuckle. Where are you going? To a place called Dick's? What is it? What, do they sell penises there? No, it's just the name. A guy named Richard. His nickname was Dick, and he started a sporting store, and then it got very large. Oh, that's what she said. Oh, come on. Like, when I went to, like, a Dick's out in Pennsylvania, and they sell so many guns. They have so many guns there. But I think it's because it's Jersey. Like, they probably can't sell much guns. This is so cool. There's a climbing wall here. Look at this. A climbing wall. They have an alligator, a shark, a monkey. Oh, these are the different levels you achieve by climbing the wall. Looks kind of dangerous. Let's see what they got here. Kayaks. This was not part of the mall of my youth. Ooh, frisbees. I love the frisbee department. I've romanticized frisbees. Can jam, America's number one party sport. Where you throw a frisbee into a can. It's a good sport. Wow. It's kind of cool. It's kind of remote. It's like not that many. It's not that crowded. I guess like it's the summer now, so people are like on vacation. They're not just like going to the mall. What is this? Innova. Disc golf. Oh, this is kind of cool. Disc golf. This is kind of cool. The Beast. I like this. I may get one of these. It's a new kind of frisbee, but they're smaller and they have like a thicker edge. This is the kind of thing that is pointless, but that I kind of dig.
The Overnightscape 1250, World Tree Attraction, January 10th, 16, 05/30.
Some of this corn whiskey I got the other day. Georgia Moon corn whiskey. I reviewed this the other day. Have some little drink. And I got some new incense. Yeah. Whoa. Let's drop my Sharpie. Got some new incense from the same series. I found it at the Japanese bookstore Kinokuniya over there by Bryant Park. Fragrance Memories. It's from the Exotic and Nature series. It's Silk Road Dream. And this is, the phrase is, where hope and despair mingle, Silk Road Dream. Au croisement du rêve à du désespoir, Silk Road Dream. Great. So this is the flavors of Ginkgo, Olibanum, and fennel. Now, fennel, I have heard of. The first two, I think we're going to have to sort of analyze what they are. I don't know. But it smells very exotic. It smells kind of like the incense that they would burn in, like, New Age shops in, like, the 80s and early 90s. You know? But I don't recognize the name of it.
There's a little match. It's analog fire. A match. And we got to talk about analog photography later. If we get to it. I'm lighting my incense. I'm having some trouble here. Imagine if the wood of this match is... This is a wooden match. Imagine if the wood was from Yggdrasil. I wonder what would happen. I think the incense would just smell a lot better. You know, if it was like Yggdrasil wood. Or maybe all trees are just versions of Yggdrasil. So let's try to figure this out. What is Jink? J-I-N-K-O-H? Jinko. Jinko. What the hell is that? Jinko. Jinko. It only comes up in... maybe it's aloes wood. Aloes wood. Jinko Jizan. Okay. Aloes wood. Yeah. That's why it's kind of familiar. And what about Olibanum? O-L-I-B-A-N-U-M. Olibanum. These sound like very, like, dreamlike terms, you know? And it's called Silk Road Dream. That's frankincense! From the old, from the nativity. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Wow. So frankincense, aloes wood, and fennel. Nice. Yeah, it's a really... It has a little bit of that perfumey edge, but also kind of that musky and kind of like wild, man. And I remember when I was growing up, when I was in college, there was this guy named Kitaro, a new age synthesizer guy, who subsequent years, I haven't really run across him that much. I don't think he's that popular anymore, but he had these albums called Silk Road and Silk Road 2. And, I think I had Silk Road 2. What is this? A live version of Silk Road by Kitaro?